This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
And thank you to our special sponsors, Iris Software, iris.co.uk. Martin, you saw a great video just recently from Iris, didn't you?
Yeah, what I think people don't understand about Iris is they were ahead of the game for MTD Phase 1 because they were the first software vendor to be listed as approved by the HMRC for MTD filing. And guess what? They're fully prepared for the next. So they've got an MTD webinar on demand that you can catch up with at any time. Rob, where did they go to see this?
It's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. That stands for Making Tax Digital for our international listeners. And there's some great stuff there that you need to know to guide you through the whole Making Tax Digital initiative. So iris.co.uk/MTD webinar. Right, Martin?
That's right. So wherever you are in your journey, at Iris know that they have the knowledge and tools to help you in the next steps. That's iris.co.uk/MTD webinar.
On this week's Accounting Influencers Podcast, Martin Bissett and I have another action-packed show lined up for you. Martin, we start with the news. What's been on your mind this week?
We do indeed start with the news, and we're going to look at what recent fintech acquisitions say about what is valuable in a business, Rob, because we're seeing some strange valuation metrics that we haven't seen before, and it's telling us what's valuable to acquiring parties. And for those of our listeners who are preparing for exit in the next 5 years, they need to make sure that they've got the right assets with the right value that they're working on right now.
That's going to be fascinating. And without too many spoilers, it's not going to be what accountants traditionally think is valuable, is it?
Not the traditional GRF multiple, no.
I've got an interview with Stephen Heathcote. He's the global CEO of Prime Global. Stephen is a player. He's very big on leadership. And we talk about what's happening with the accounting profession worldwide, what he's doing with his member firms there at Prime Global. So many interesting things falling out of COVID, both in terms of the challenges for accounting firms and the opportunities for those firms. So Stephen's the real deal. I'm looking forward to that.
And then here's what works. We're going to look at what works for accountants and CPAs on telling compelling stories.
Do you like a good story?
Yeah, I like a good story too, but I don't know if accountants see themselves as natural born storytellers. So what we're going to do in this section is we're going to show you a firm who has become a master, or let's say have mastered, the storytelling process in its most simplistic form and how that is leading directly to grade A client inquiries.
And what I'm looking forward to hear from you on that one, Martin, is not just about how to tell better stories, but why it's important, what the benefits are of doing that, rather than just telling people how great you are.
Yeah, and which ones are actually there to be told in any given practice. So for any of our listeners, they can look towards their own client portfolio and bring out the same types of, not case studies, but the types of stories that really engage the potential buyer, the potential client. And that's what we want them to do with this little section.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'm going to finish off with an interview with Bobby Lane. If we talk about accounting influencers, you've known him a while, Martin, haven't you?
I have indeed. And for listeners who are new to this show, we look at track record when we pick interview subjects, and Bobby certainly qualifies on that score.
He does. He works at Factotum now, and they've got a really interesting proposition for small and medium businesses, and he's going to share with you some hints on that one and how it works, dovetails with what accountants are doing in providing almost a one-stop shop for all of the services that a business needs. So that's today's show. Should we get started, Martin?
The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
Cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom
from the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world. The Accounting Influencers Podcast.
So in this week's news, Martin, it's a topic we've been meaning to talk about for the last few weeks, and it's the activity happening in the fintech software vendor world. We've seen a couple of deals recently. Tell us what's going on.
Well, we did intend to deal with this immediately, but as you say, we had other news items that were perhaps more pressing. But a few weeks ago, and international listeners should really take note of this, Sage, General Ledger Platform, bought GoProposal pricing software. And I say pricing software, that perhaps does them a disservice, but a proposal building and pricing software would be more accurate. So we don't know the multiple, we don't know the price, but it is believed to be very high. It's believed to be perhaps in the eight-figure range, although that's purely speculation, I hasten to add. What we're looking at here in the news and why we're bringing this to our listeners this week is what it is they've bought. Because our listeners have got professional services firms, and our professional services firms model is typically made up of whatever their revenue is, which is a composite of how many bums on seats they've got and how many chargeable hours can be billed on a cost-plus pricing model. Now, that's not what's being sold for big bucks right now. What you've got here is a piece of software that's about 5 years old. It has accrued a very large subscriber base. And because the owners chose to be the avatars of it as well and build an evangelist element to it, they've got loyalty, or as the tech companies would say, stickiness, because they're married to both the leadership and the product at the same time. If we take a look at this, Rob, and break it down, what have Sage bought? Number one, they've bought monthly recurring revenue, which is obvious. Number two, they have bought something that is a cloud product and platform and not something that is desktop. Number three, they have bought an intangible asset of brand goodwill. And number four, they have bought the ease of being able to white label this product as their own because they've retained the leadership for at least a couple of years, I think. So the reason why we bring this up in the news is that it doesn't make a huge difference to the practitioner's life. It's what people are paying for and what is attracting a large multiple. We believe this to have attracted a multiple of maybe, again, speculation, and maybe four times annual recurring revenue. As a practitioner listening to this, if you were to get four or five times your annual recurring revenue, what would your practice have to have? Because we know that in practice acquisition, we're maybe at somewhere between 0.9 and 1.1 times recurring fees. So think about your practice right now, guys. And the question I would ask from the news item is, what have you got that is saleable? You've got recurring revenue, so that's great. But what else have you got in the way of intellectual property? What have you got in the way of team? What have you got in the way of intangible asset like brand? What is going to form your exit package, succession package, retirement package, whatever it happens to be? And should you be building it now if you haven't already got it?
Yeah, they're really good questions. And just finally on this one, Martin, can we draw any parallels with the SageGo proposal deal as with the Intuit and MailChimp acquisition?
In terms of shortcutting, we can, in that Intuit's acquisition of MailChimp gives them a huge ability to direct market immediately because of all the details it gives them. There is a lot more complexity in the Intuit MailChimp deal. And I think we'll learn just exactly what Intuit's plans are over the next few months, including what they announced at their virtual QuickBooks Connect conference last week, which we'll do in a future news item. I think what we're seeing is, and the parallel I would draw, is what are people paying for and what are they not paying for? And therefore, if you're an accounting practice, it does not separate you out from anybody else. You need to be building what people who will buy will pay for. And that's not just annual recurring revenue.
Yeah, that's very good. And just finally, I chaired a business panel for an international accounting network recently on business valuations. And whilst this has ramifications for accounting practices that are perhaps exiting selling, also for their own business clients, bringing in business valuations and knowing how these deals get done and what is bought and what gives you multiples is something really important for accountants to know.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. And again, in accounting practice en masse, I'm speaking in generalities here, not in individual cases, we are mainly driven by short-termism. The next deadline, the next client phone call. You know, we never have anybody ready to come into the organization when the resignation letter drops on the door. That comes as a surprise and we have to start recruitment from scratch. So we're not ready for any of this stuff. And I think now we're seeing enough indicators of what's valuable and what's not to acquirers. If you want to be acquired, become valuable.
Improve your practice while decreasing how hard you work to make your firm really fly. Really fly.
The Accounting Influencers Podcast
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm thrilled to have with me today Steve Heathcote from Prime Global. Stephen, hello to you.
Hi, Rob.
Great to have you with us, Stephen. And just for the benefit of people listening that may not have come across you, just tell us a little bit about your background and what you do right now.
Yeah, so I'm a chief executive of a global accountancy association called Prime Global. And we are very diverse. We have around 300 members. We're actually, the most diverse association in the world. We have offices in over 850 locations, all types of practices, sizes, different geographies. And my role really is to make sure I deliver value to all of them. I actually started off with a politics degree, but I've always had this passion of trying to make a difference and being motivated by making a difference. Quite early on in my career, I realized that business is one of the best ways of doing that because it creates jobs, you know, that creates economic wealth. That took me to accountancy. Quite early on, I actually thought, well, I'm going to make a bigger difference as I have a global role. I went off to KPMG and led on their global audit methodology, back to the UK to have a leadership role in the regulator in the UK, into ACCA, which is very global as association. So I guess I ended up here because partly my passion for the profession, but also I have a background of over 25 years now around membership associations in the accountancy profession. So it's quite a nice fit in the prime global role.
Yeah. And I didn't know that about you, that you had a heritage with politics. And I'm just thinking managing the egos and managing partners and senior people in accounting firms all over the world, that must come in useful from time to time.
It does. Yes. I think politics is a great discipline because it brings a bit of everything, a bit of psychology, a bit of economics. Yeah. But yes.
And just to make the distinction, Stephen, share with us the difference between an association, a network, and an alliance, just for those people that are not familiar with those terms.
With a network, it's often very much about a common name. They're presenting themselves, I think, as one into the market. And firms which are part of a network, they often share similar sort of quality standards, similar name. An association is they're all very independent firms. They're very proud of their own names, actually. There's a heritage behind most of their names. But they're coming together to share ideas, to help their clients and collaborate where they can. But it's much more about choice in the way they work. Alliance is a difficult term because sometimes that's somewhere in between. Network and association is not so defined, but Prime Global is definitely about choice and about bringing people together, helping support each other, a kind of common community of support.
And how important is it in these, shall we say, troubled or challenging times that we're in, that firms are not isolated and they do belong to some community, something bigger than themselves?
Oh yeah, I mean, this is vital, I think, because, you know, yes, the pandemic's had massive impact. That's really just accelerated trends which are out there already. Automation of accounting services, a shift from compliance to consultancy. That means for the firms, there's massive choices and uncertainty about what do they do as a practice? How do they develop the right skills? What will their clients want in the future? So if you're part of a family where you can actually share ideas, you can see the early adopters, who's leading the way, who can you learn from? It gives you that much more confidence. The best thing in leadership is learning from others. Why make all the mistakes yourself or take the risks yourself when you can actually hear from your friends and you can make informed judgments from those people who you trust? That trusted association, I think is more important than ever before.
It's a really good point. There's so much hype out there and firms are looking for what is the best way to handle this or this, or how do I deal with this problem, or what are other firms doing that are handling this particularly well? And that must be of real comfort, if you like, team members.
It absolutely is. And I've seen that particularly during the pandemic. There's probably been more interaction across the firms than ever before. When the pandemic started to happen, from my role point of view, I was a little worried. I think, okay, look, we have events and that's been a central part of what associations do. Yeah. But actually, if anything, the values come across more strongly for the reason you're saying. It's more about having those trusted relationships they could reach out to. And there's been so many of these different forums coming together and working together on how to support their teams, you know, what it means in terms of their business. And actually just having a shoulder to cry on and getting a sympathetic hearing because other people are going through the same thing. Yeah. And that's always very comforting when you know that.
What surprised you most about stepping into this role? Has anything shocked you or really overwhelmed you or changed your thinking?
It's my first move into a chief executive role. Now, I've been on senior management teams for a large chunk of my career working with chief executives, but part of the team. And I suppose in my head, probably quite naively, I was thinking, you know, you're going to be in control and you can get the things done. It should be easier to kind of plow through things and lead. But actually, I think, and it should have been obvious in a way, but when I got into the role, you realize, you know, it's still actually more about influence, helping people see your vision, making sure that they feel they know where they're trying to get to, but then they're empowered themselves. And that takes a huge amount of work, both with the accountancy firms, but also with my own team, to hear them, listen to them, and then bring them to a common place. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably a surprise in a way, that actually when you're in the CEO role, the leadership is still through others. You're there trying to help get them to the place you believe is right. Your ability to do that depends on your influence and ability to persuade others.
I'm thinking of an analogy of a football manager. Do you sometimes feel like you are a football manager and dealing with your team or your members, that some need an arm round the shoulder and a place to cry, and others need a stern word and a really strong pushback? Because they're different personalities in different roles, aren't they?
They absolutely are. are, and you have to spend that time listening to all of them and then make sure it can all come back together in a way that they all complement each other and they can actually understand each other. So I tend to be more on the sort of collaborative side, so I'm trying to help the others understand other people's needs so they can come together more as a team and share experiences and work more closely together.
And I'm just thinking of how my wife and I met. We met in a health club and we were both got at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was the one that would go into the circuit training class with some sergeant major saying, "Brownie, give me 10 more push-ups, you piece of dirt," and get told what to do. Whereas Amanda would go off to the gym and the machines and a lycra and look great and do her own thing. And she said, "The last thing I would want is somebody shouting at me first thing in the morning." And I thought, how different we are and how different we learn and take on information and respond.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're dealing with different cultures, the diversity and even within countries. So we've just completed quite a major strategy piece of work, but we took time because we didn't want to go out and just say, this is the way. Now I've spoken to 160 firms, each firm spending a few hours with us. And the end result, you kind of can look at it and say, well, wasn't that kind of obvious? But the point is everyone's voice has been heard and they can all relate to it and they all understand what it means. And I think that's absolutely critical in association.
Very good. Now, I've known you a while. You're an extremely passionate person. You're very positive. I would almost say the light shines out of your eyes when you talk about what it is that you're doing and the difference that you make. So what are you most proud of on your watch?
Oh, well, definitely what I'm most proud of is winning the award for the most sustainable organization at the Digital Accounting Forum Awards, which are put on by the International Accounting Bulletin. I mean, you know, but they're very, very, very competitive. And
well, I was a judge in that.
But... You were a judge, yes. You were, and you know how competitive it was, all the associations going for this. But the reason I was proud of it was because Prime Global has been almost like a best kept secret in the profession. You meet the member firms, the staff, the partners, they're so passionate about their clients and they are very positive people as well. They will work together, they collaborate, there's lots of friendships. And for my team, they give everything to support them. So I felt by being able to kind of put a spotlight on that, it's given them the recognition they deserve. So I was just so proud that I could actually go back to both the members and the team and say, look, that you deserve this. This is for you. So that's definitely the moment I felt best, really.
And you're right. You want it for them, don't you? It's not so much for you and your ego, but you see how hard everyone works behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I think that's a key for leadership. You know, the leadership is actually about others and how you make them feel and what they achieve and what they can do and the potential they can realize. But when you see that coming through and you see what it means to them, ultimately it's more important to people than a bonus or a salary increase. Mm. So they actually do feel they've made a difference and they've been recognized for it.
Well, that's a recent success for you. Let me just take you forward 10, 20 years. You still look pretty young. You've got very few gray hairs and wrinkles. In terms of legacy, what do you think people will say about Stephen Heathcote when you're gone? Or what do you want them to say?
I'd like them to look at Prime Global and feel that it has really realized its potential and it has brought firms together much more closely. There is this high degree of sharing. The firms themselves feel ready for the future. They feel confident. The staff, the team is working as one. We have very clear direction that we're anticipating change. We're continuing to change. And that's all about a culture and a way of working. So for me, the biggest legacy is the right culture is there. That continues the ongoing success of Prime Global. So people wouldn't talk so much about me, but they would be talking about the fantastic culture and direction of Prime Global. And I would know I've made a massive contribution to that and how that's been put together.
Yeah, that's very good. So while your ego is feeling quite stroked and your head's big right now, let's talk about failure. Let's talk about when things haven't gone right. Can you think of an experience, an initiative or something where you failed, you got it badly wrong? And what did you learn from it?
Yeah, this is a great question. I think often failure, it's not so much you have a catastrophic failure. It can happen. Okay. But in a way, we fail every day in different things and it's how you learn from them. For me, probably one of the big learnings is managing my blind spots. And my blind spot actually can often be about leadership, that because I am passionate about something and I really want it to be in place, I think it's in place. So it's kind of like a bias. And that's happened to me before. I'm thinking of a time when I was leading the implementation of quite a large CRM system in a large organization. And I had everything in place, the controls, the processes. I was tracking compliance. Every day I get my reports and they come back and say, yeah, people are using the system now. They're ticking the boxes. And it was actually an independent advisor came in and they went around talking to everyone. And they said, they don't believe in it. You haven't won their hearts and minds. So yeah, sure, they're ticking the boxes. But that CRM system has got so much value in it. But they don't actually see that. They just think they're meeting their compliance requirement. And I think for me, I just realized that actually you need this outside in view. You need someone all the time is going to come and say, this is the real world. This is what we're seeing. And you may not be seeing it. So I do try and do that now. I try and have have quite a wide network of different types of people. And in my own team, we'll often bring in member firms, and just into our discussions, they can say to us, well, this is what it feels like to be part of Prime Global. So you don't build up unconscious bias of the world I'd like to be out there, but it may not be out there. I have learned that through some of my failures in leadership over the years.
Some of them. There are more, obviously, that we could go into. But I'm just wondering what Stephen Heathcote is like when you get told off, when you get that realization. Do you go into assault? Do you get defensive? Do you take it on the chin and put your hand up and say, goodness, you're right? How do you react?
Yeah, it's always difficult for all of us. You get feedback you don't want to hear, or you see something happen you don't want to hear. Same with everyone. My first reaction can be, oh, that can't be right. But again, you learn.
Denial.
denial. But I've learned that nearly every time that happens, you get something from it which makes you better. And it takes reflection time. So it's really important to disconnect, come back, and actually go back to, why am I doing this? And I'm doing it because I want to make a difference. I want to make an impact. And if that's what you believe, anyone, anything tells you, any experience you have, you have to think, well, that's good. I heard it, because they would have been saying it anyway. So it's best you hear about it, and then you can decide what you do about it. So for me, it takes a little time. I hear, but then I have to reflect, and then I'll start to kind of think, okay, what's the best way forward on this? That could actually take me, you know, potentially a few weeks to work it all through, to get to a point that I understand what I've heard and what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Now, I know what a voracious learner you are. You seek out mentors and coaches. You're accountable to people. You want to be in and part of the conversation with other influencers and leaders like yourself. So tell us about who's spoken into your life. Any particular bits of advice you've been given over the years that have really served you well in your leadership role?
I have been very fortunate, because I've been working with some great people. But one of those really very strong leaders was the chief executive of the Association of Chartered Certified Accountants, Helen Brand. I'm sure, Rob, if you've met Helen, but
I've come across Helen, yeah.
Very impressive leader. And when I first took this role, I've asked her, I said, look, any advice for a CEO? And she said, look, just remember, always do what you think is right. And that advice, I go back to it almost every day, because you can sit in this type of position and you start worrying about, oh, can I get this through the board? How will I maneuver something through? What's going to be the reaction for someone? Should I wait? You know, there's all these uncertainty out there. But actually, if you go back to that point about, okay, what do you actually think is the right thing? And then stick to it. Hopefully people come with you, and certainly they understand why you're taking a particular position. But if they don't, you know, I might be in the wrong place. That's fine. But at least I've shown the right leadership for the right reasons. So personally, I found that advice very, very helpful.
Yeah. My background was in teaching. I was a maths teacher for a number of years. And what dawned on me about the career progression was that as you upgrade to head teacher and beyond, it takes you away from the children that gives you the most passion about the job, the teaching. So intrigued to ask you if being a leader has taken you away from what you love doing the most.
Yeah, it's a great question, because actually what I've found is what I love doing most has changed. And I'm fortunate that the leadership roles have changed with it. So I know exactly what you mean, because what I love doing is leading change.
Right.
You know, I'm being part of change. And I go from my career, nearly all the roles I've had, there's been something behind that has been trying to think about the future, trying to move an organization on, get to a better place. And I love working on that and getting my hands dirty on that and seeing it through. But then when you're in this role, it's also still about change, because I'm anticipating, but it's about others doing that. And what I've started to do is take a love and take pleasure from seeing the team deliver something, or seeing an individual who starts to really rise up and realize their potential. And that it's much less about me doing it myself, but you can kind of get pleasure about seeing others do it. You know, I do still love this role, but perhaps for different reasons from what I used to love doing in the earlier stages of my career.
But you are doing an excellent job of painting a very pretty picture of your role. Like, it's all roses and it's great and it's passionate and you're leading change. But there must be some things that frustrate you about your job, about the accounting profession generally, the space that you're in. Do you want to have a little rant?
It's definitely on the accounting profession. I get extremely frustrated with where we are in terms of diversity of the profession and the leadership. Because you look at it today, say in terms of female leadership, less than a fifth of partners, and this is pretty much globally, are female. I've been involved in the accountancy profession over 25 years now. It's not that much changed, not really. Not in terms of those hard figures. There's been changes in attitude. But you look at those hard figures, that is not a very good improvement over a 25 5-year journey. So that is extremely frustrating, because if you think about that talent, the capability that's being wasted there, the fact that the profession desperately needs new thinking and creativity, and we're closing that out, that is frustrating. I'm hoping the pandemic may have opened people's mind up to a more flexibility around working, seeing the value of different contributions. It's been a bit of a leveler in how people contribute. Let's hope that have a long-lasting effect. For me, it's a very frustrating part of the profession. We've not been able to make that shift that's required.
Yeah, I hear your pain there. But certainly COVID, the pandemic, is accelerating change and bringing to light certain things that were perhaps tolerated or people were complacent about before.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we've all met people who are adamant that if you worked, you had to work in an office, that they were reluctant for certain things perhaps to be automated, moving everything to a cloud. Well, I've always done it this particular way. And I suppose that's another frustration that when I do talk to some partners and their belief is it needs to be their way, that's what they're used to. And that can be a frustrating part in the profession, because it does put blinkers up in terms of opening things up and learning from others. But like you say, they've seen a massive amount of change in the course of 12 months, probably more than, you know, 6, 7, 8 years.
What do you love most about what you do?
It probably goes back to when I was talking about teams, seeing people achieve things and feeling that we've really made a difference with something. So I love it when there's collaboration and you see people aligning behind a common goal. So for example, we had a big virtual conference. It was just a short while ago. It took a whole team effort to make that happen. And then we got fantastic feedback about it.
Right.
We're bringing in some new members now. It's involving a number of team members to do that. And that sense of common purpose, and we've done this together, is very motivating. And actually, you know, around my office here, I have little mementos of things we've achieved over the years in teams that you can just remember. And that for me is very motivating.
I see also a passion in you for developing people. As listeners may know, we ran a series of 24 panels with leaders of global accounting associations. You were a big part of that. But also we went to your bench, didn't we, Steve? We invited the exec team members of many alliances and associations to come on as well as yourself and see what they knew about what was going on. And Prime Global showed up really heavily and showed a lot of strength in depth in how you're developing those leaders. So you must be proud of that.
Absolutely. And I wasn't always like this, but I've learned it over the years that, you know, part of leadership is putting others on the center stage, because they're the ones who can then get things done. They can bring others with them. You get more impact if you care about the outcome. Mm. Then you'll be much more successful if you've got that team around you, rather than them all having to come back to you and get directions. And then what happens if you're not there? So I really want a team that are motivated, feel empowered, they can deliver. So it's fantastic that you gave them that opportunity. They enjoyed it, but they also were exceptionally good on the panel.
But if you look at your peers, Stephen, you must see chief execs and leaders in your position that don't like to give the limelight away to somebody else, because it's more about them than the team.
Yeah, I do see that. And I think I've learned from that as well, in the way those great leaders, they always lead with their teams and they always make their teams feel really good about themselves. They always give them opportunities. And now I think about myself, you know, what have I appreciated in my career? It's never being told what to do. It's always been given that space to try something, show some innovation, a bit entrepreneurial really, but within the workplace. Well, if that's what motivates me, I'm sure it's what motivates others. So I do try and make sure I don't follow that example. Like, leadership isn't about the individual. It's about the collective. It's about collaboration.
That sounds wise. Is there a particular thinker or a book or a movement that's shaped your philosophy in life and business? Because I know how much you think about things.
Well, the book that comes to mind, it's a book called Traction, Gina Wickman. And it's actually aimed at entrepreneurs, but it's aimed at businesses which are just getting to that point where if they really want to go to the next level, they're going to have to scale. So they need to make sure that they've got the right systems, they've got the right dashboard, if you like, to be able to monitor their business, the right capability in the right places. And what the book does is it's a practical guide for everything you'd have to put in place to run a successful business. And that actually works almost in any size of business. So I've been using that with my own team. You have a jar, got your large rocks, you've got pebbles and you've got sand. The only way you can get everything in the jar is you start with your large rocks, which are your important things.
So it's a great analogy, isn't it?
It is. With our team, every quarter we have our rocks, because it gives us focus, gives us a lot of satisfaction when we achieve them. So there's lots of sort of practical ways of really being clear about where you're trying to get to, and then lining up all your resource and capability behind that. So I'd recommend that to anyone who's in a leadership role and they're managing people, they've got an organization. It's just a very, very good practical book you can pick up and use.
Yeah, it's a great shout. Now, we touched earlier on the hype that is in the accounting profession in your world and mine. Is there any really bad doctrine or advice you've seen being put out there by individuals or movements that really gets your goat, as we say?
I think I'd go back to what I said before, Rob. It's when you do hear the partners basically saying, my experience is the right experience, they're expecting to to get the next level of partners, well, those people should go through the ranks. They should go off and do the junior work and then pull through. They should work the 12, 13 hour days, just like I did, because that's the way to go. That's so damaging because the world changes. Clients need different services. They need more entrepreneurial approaches, more creativity, use of technology. And of course, people want different things. They care about the environment often, you know, care about wider society making an impact. So the roots have to be very different. But quite often in the profession, we tend to close people down. And I think it's because we can be very regimented sometimes, very structured. Some of the work is very structured and it just can make people a little bit blinkered. You see it in some of the partnerships sometimes that when that's happening, they're really losing talent. It makes it hard for the practice to really to move on. So yeah, I think again, the pandemic's probably helped because it forced people to make some of the changes they wouldn't have been willing to make without having been put in this circumstance.
You bring up a really good point. When I talk to firms about succession and talent, they do, these senior partners feel that sense of entitlement that I served my time and so should you. So we're going to chain you to a desk for 10, 15 years and then you might be partner material. And that's just not how it works now, is it?
No, it's not. And then they're reluctant to promote people because they think they'll leave. It takes a totally different mindset to see things from the perspective of the next generation coming through. When you see the firms doing that, it can be very, very successful, the model.
Yeah,
we have to be open-minded.
Well, Stephen, this is brilliant. Some of the leadership insights you're sharing with us are fabulous. If people are intrigued by what you're doing at Prime Global, want to look at membership or just have a conversation with you, pick your brains on leadership, or maybe want to be a part of what you're doing, what's a good way for them to reach you?
Well, absolutely directly via email, just like all my contact details are up on the website. I always like talking to people about different things because that's how we learn. That's how I learn. Please have a look at what we're doing. We do a lot of work around good practices and sharing. So being part of that, it's not just about Prime Global members. This is about changing the profession overall. So it'd be great to talk to people about that. And we work in partnership and collaboration with so many different organizations. It'd be very happy to have those conversations as well.
That's great. And in closing, share with us for the upcoming leaders, if you like, the people that are listening to you and think, oh, I'd love to do what Stephen Heathcote's doing. That sounds like a great role for me. Let me aim towards that in my accounting role. What one piece of advice would you give to them to help them cope and really accelerate their progress?
Yeah, I think I'd go back to be clear about why you're doing it. It's just the test about, can you look in the mirror and think, well, who am I? What do I stand for? Why do you want to take on the role? For me, that's all about the difference I can make, the impact I can make, my belief in the positive force of the accountancy profession. So if that's who I'm seeing in the mirror, everything I do is building around that. If you want to do this role because it's about just having CEO in your name or being on the front stage yourself, or it's about your ego, to me, that's not going to be the right path and you probably will not end up being an effective leader. So I think that constant test of look in the mirror, who do I want to be? Where do I want to go and why? And being very comfortable with that is probably the best advice I could give someone.
That's so good. Stephen Heathcote, Chief Executive of Prime Global. That's been superb. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you for the opportunity.
And now we come to one of our favourite sections, Martin. It's Here's What Works. And I do love a good story. Do you?
I'm all there for a good story. And here's one for you, and all the listeners will decide whether it's good or not. For many, many years, I used to stand on stages in front of audiences.
You were that guru, Martin, weren't you, that they called out? The keynote speaker.
Back in the day, repressed but immaculately dressed. And I used to stand in front of the audience. I'd say, please put your hand up if you think that your clients and potential clients give us stuff about your professional qualifications and what letters you've got after your name in what order.
Ooh, way to rile up an audience.
Give them what they don't want, that's what I always say. Of course, no one was daft enough to put their hand up for that. Then I'd say, okay, if you think that your clients and prospects have a complete comprehension of what your list of services mean and whether they need it or not, no one put their hand up for that. If you think that your clients want you to solve their problems for them, both on professional and personal basis, and that's why they're coming to you, put your hands up. And of course, everybody's hand went up. And then I'd say, come back now. On your website, can I find that alphabet of letters after your name? Yes, I could. On your website, can I find the list of services that mean nothing to the likes of the buyer? Yes, I could. All these problems that you solve, can I find stories left, right, and center about all of those you solve? Not a testimonial. I don't mean a testimonial. I mean stories. I don't even mean case studies. I mean stories. Tell me a story, a pictorial story, you know. And of course, the very two things that they just told me the prospects and clients weren't interested in are the very things I could find on their website. And the very thing they've just told me that their clients and prospects buy is the very thing I can't find on their website. So don't be surprised, guys, if you want to be all added value and the only thing you ever get is compliance inquiries. Your website doesn't say
you do anything beyond compliance.
And you speak a lot, Martin, on evidence-based proof, don't you? And I'm reminded of the quote by Muhammad Ali, the famous boxer, who said, it ain't bragging if you've done it.
If you don't blow your own horn, there is no music.
But it's not saying we're great at this. It's saying we've done it, and here's the proof, and here's the story.
It's a statement of fact. It's a statement of fact. So everyone's got testimonials, because everyone can find somebody's mum to say that they love them. You know, so everyone's got one of those. And we as the buying public, are wise to that. So we don't really buy into testimonials because we know that everyone's got one because somebody likes it somewhere. But it is far harder to refute a story. And there's a firm, Rob, in the south of Wales who have done an incredible job of this. And when you go to their website now, when you land on their website, there are simply six faces. Those faces are not of anybody who works for that firm, but they are six clients who've consented to be featured on the website. And each one is a story of how their professional or personal dreams came true as a result of the intervention of that particular accounting firm.
Well, aside from anything else, how different and refreshing is that? Because 99% of accounting firm websites look exactly the same.
It'd be different if you want, but I would rather you be better. If I want to buy something, I want to buy it from the best place. And so you click on these and you find out about someone's dream home and how it was funded. You find out about how somebody got their Sundays back because they were working 7 days a week. You find out about how someone's sales goals became a reality so that they were able to buy a certain status symbol. You find out about how a guy who runs restaurants was able to pass it on to his family, where previously it didn't look like that was possible. And these are the stories. When you land on a site like that, you're being spoken to in your own language. You're not having to say, yes, we are fully compliant on IR45, IR28, PR45, and BQ. You haven't got that because it doesn't mean anything to you. What you've got is faces that are like yours in businesses that are like yours, who have problems like yours, who got solved. And you're the one who hasn't had their problems solved because your accountant isn't talking to you like that. That has been the conduit for their new business inquiries. My point to summarize is this. If we will just dig into our past, because I know every firm when I ask them from the stage, they won't respond to a general question, but when I ask them specifically, they've got stories to tell. Every firm's got stories of incredible things that they've done for their client base. I know that firms make profound impacts for their clients, but they do not highlight it. If they will just take those stories and put them front and center of their communication with their prospects, all of a sudden, issues like price sensitivity and grade A quality clients coming in will become much less of an issue for that firm. Yeah.
So Martin, if we're calling this segment, Here's What Works, with storytelling for accountants, I'm going to ask you for two or three tips for accountants to really get their hands around this. And in closing, from my perspective, we're always talking about advisory services and the importance for accounting professionals to tell the stories behind the numbers and to talk about impact and results rather than here's what we did. It's what they end up with as a result of you doing what you did. So what two or three tips would you give our accounting practitioners, bookkeepers, CPAs listening to get better with their storytelling?
Okay, well, first of all, please be aware, and this is tip number one, that very few businesses come to an accountant and want to buy some advisory services. Could I buy some advisory services, please? Those advisory services that you stock. Can I buy some of those? I hear they're very nice. It says on your website, I'd like to buy six advisory services, please. How much are they? No one does that. Okay, so talk in their language, number one. Number two, outcomes, not service lines. Speak in fact, speak in irrefutable statistic. This happened in that timescale, which produced that result. And number three, make your clients the hero of the story. Put them front and center and make your prospects and your perhaps lesser utilized clients know that there's so much more on offer from you than just accountancy services.
That's been brilliant, Martin. Thanks so much for that. Accountants out there, you've got to be a little bit more creative, and we use that word advisedly, but start to tell these stories. It's no good just being a good outcome for that client. You can leverage that for great opportunities to bring on board new clients, keep your existing clients loyal, and uplift to those advisory service by telling them what's possible.
And it's not as difficult as firms and listeners might think. It is simply a case of having the guts to ask your clients if they mind being featured. And guess what? Clients don't mind being featured in association with success. And having the guts to say, we're actually good at what we do. And here's the proof.
You're listening to the Accounting Influencers podcast, cutting through the crap to bring you the very best interviews, insights, and wisdom
from the planet's most influential people in the accounting and fintech world,
with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Hi, welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today an old friend, Bobby Lane. Bobby, good day to you.
Hi, Rob. Nice to see you.
Great to have you with us. Bobby, for the benefit of people listening that may not have come across you, and I'm sure there are not many, just tell us a little bit about your journey and what got you to here.
Well, I started off life as a chartered accountant with BDO back in the early 90s, and then ended up being headhunted by Saatchi & Saatchi to turn around their PR division. And whilst I was there, started developing a business model for the accounting profession to develop outsourcing services and advisory services for SME businesses, which was back in 2003, which really was the first of its kind to go to owner-managed businesses and say, look, you focus on what you do best and I'll run your back office for you. So it was offering advisory, outsourcing, bookkeeping, outsourced FT services. In 2008, we were offering a full service advisory practice from everything from doing the bookkeeping, payroll management accounts, outsourced FT services to year-end accounts, tax, and all under one roof on a monthly retainer. So we could change the way that accountants were operating with their clients and offering them a monthly retainer as opposed to hourly rate. Won all sorts of awards, took the business international, joined an international, helped build an international association globally. Got to about 2017 and sold the practice to Blick Rothenberg, which was owned by the HG-backed Cogital Group at that point. Yeah. Always had a vision of something else I wanted to do and taking the outsourcing business one step further. So I left the end of 2019 to form what became known as Factotum, which was taking outsourcing and advisory services for owner-managed businesses one step further and building a true multidisciplinary outsourcing practice to work with SMEs. So that's my journey in a nutshell.
I know, and what a journey it's been. How much do you feel the accounting profession has changed, Bobby, over the years?
It's changed dramatically. When I first went into the profession, accountants were seen as the kind of necessary evil for a business. It was something that you had to do. You needed to speak to your accountant to help you through all the compliance rules and regulations and the tax rules and everything you had to do on an annual basis. Where it's changed is the relationship between a client and their accountant. And the client now looks to their accountant as an extension of their team, someone who can be the translator of the numbers and really explain what's happening in their business, but also help them navigate certain areas. And we've seen that has been incredibly important during the pandemic over the last 2 years, with accountants being able to support those businesses, help them identify what help was available, help put cash flow forecasts and business plans together, and really become an integral part of that business. So I think they've gone from being someone who provides compliance services to someone who can really add value for a business. And it was, I suppose, the change that I've seen is that it's something where it was a meeting that a client used to dread to one that they look forward to because they can see where it can add value to their business.
Sure, that's a really good point. But who's driving that change? Is the accountant more agile and proactive than they used to be in going out with that service, or are the clients demanding it of them?
The accountants have had to learn new skills and new services because you can't just sit behind compliance services anymore and just provide, you know, your statutory accounts at the end of the year. You have to be someone who can really add value to a business. And if a client can't get what they want from their existing accountant, they're going to move to someone who can provide the services they need. So it's been driven by the clients, but it's a change that accountants have had to make to be able to provide the services that those clients need moving forward.
That's a really good point, because the compliance is dead debate, rages on, doesn't it? And it's an elegant business model for accountants because they've got that money coming in every month.
Yeah.
Businesses have to do it. But in keeping their clients and adding value to their clients, they've got to be ready to give more.
Absolutely. What's changed has been what the client is getting for the fees they're paying the accountants. What I've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is that accountants were very panicky about technology and were very worried that it was going to destroy their fee base and the services they were providing for their clients. But what we've seen is that technology is an enabler that allows a lot of the routine processes to be done more efficiently and more effectively. And you could pass some of the processing work over to the clients or to the technology or to whatever system they have set up. And what that means is that what a client is paying the accountant for is where they're adding value, translating the numbers, showing what the business is doing, and really helping them navigate the minefield of running a business. And what that means is if a client was paying someone £300 a month, £300 a quarter, or a few thousand pounds, whatever it may be, previously they might have been paying 75% of that fee for processing work and 25% for the added value advisory work that was adding value to that relationship. And that's now changed. So I think 25% is probably more for the processing and topping and tailing some of the work and the input that's gone in. And the rest of it is for what is my business doing? What does it need? What cash do I need? If I'm going to grow, how am I going to grow it? And it's the accountant looking at the numbers, translating what they mean, and helping a business decide how they should navigate the way forward.
Yeah. Are you a fan of the term trusted advisor?
If you look at everyone's website, most people have trusted advisor
exactly,
on there.
Or,
you know, partner in your business with the extension of your team. People have been saying the same things for many years. And it's fine to use it because you are a trusted advisor.
Right.
And you are the first point of contact. And you are someone someone that the client will go to understand what they need and go to someone who can provide them with the right information that they need moving forward. So it's okay to use it, provided you're living it and it's real and it's something you are actually genuinely delivering, because there's no point saying you're a trusted advisor or you're an advisor in any way if you're not. If you're just doing compliance work and just doing what they need rather than giving them what they want, you're a trusted advisor, but in name only.
And does that come down to the individual accountant? The onus is on them to upskill and professionally develop so that become that advisor, or is that the culture and the ethos of the firm itself?
It's an interesting question, Rob, actually, because there are going to be some people that are fantastically technical accountants that may not be the best people in front of a client. So I think the onus is on the firm itself to identify the skills of the people within the practice and use people for their relevant skills. Because sending someone who is an introvert, who doesn't like going out to meetings and into a room of people to go and network, is the worst thing you could possibly do, because you're not going to get the best out of that person.
Yeah.
So it's identifying where people are. And in my last practice, that was what we were very good at, was identifying people, identifying people's skills, what they were good at, and using them for those skills. So actually identifying which partners are good at running client relationships, which are great technically, and which are good at going to explain what management accounts mean to a client or what they're going to need. So I think the onus is on the firm to identify their team, their skills, and use people to the best of their ability, rather than trying to make people do a bit of everything. Let people focus on what they're good at.
That's a really good point. And I go further and say, when I teach accountants to win business in our Business Development Academy, there are lots of different ways to win business. And some are more in tune with the networking side of it. Some love creating content and thought leadership. Some love hanging around on social media and LinkedIn. Some like picking up the phone. So you've got to get them playing to their strengths, haven't you?
That's right. And I've seen that a lot over the last year during the pandemic. It's been interesting to watch the evolution of many accountants onto social media and how they've developed their own personalities. Some have given some amazing content, amazing support in a more technical way. Some have been dancing and singing and doing magic, but it's all about being confident in what you have to offer, but actually delivering your services and your skills in a way that makes sense. Mm. Because as I said, there's no point an overly, a very, very technical accountant singing on LinkedIn. It just wouldn't make any sense.
Mm. How coachable do you feel accountants are? Because we know they're super smart. They've got technical qualifications. They've got letters after their name, particularly learning new skills. I'm not talking about technical upgrades, but I'm talking about learning business development skills, commercial acumen. What kind of an appetite do you feel they have for that?
Well, it's very interesting. My son's about to start a training contract in the profession in August, and a number of his friends are as well. And 6 or 7 young 21-year-olds that are about to go into the profession, and they've got very, very different skills. You can already see from their personalities and how they are where they'd fit into the profession. If I was hiring them, I know where they'd be in 3 or 4 years' time. And you've got some that will get through the qualification, but then will go on to be fantastic business development, client relationship people. There's some in there who are incredibly bright that will breeze through the exam, but will be fantastic technical partners that will support it. And you can actually almost see from these 6 people that, or 7 people that I've seen going in, that actually if they put together as a partnership, they'd be a fantastic partnership because they've got very different skills. It's very much identifying what you're comfortable with, what you're good at. And I genuinely believe you're never going to make someone good at everything. And I think that's the mistake the profession has made over the last 20 years. And I've seen it in various firms I've worked with and met and talked to, where they sit there and say, right, you've got to do a bit of business development, you've got to do a bit of technical work, and you've got to look after a client, you've got to win work, and you've got to manage staff. It doesn't work. You've got to focus on what people are good at and give them a role that's going to benefit the firm by playing to their strengths.
Yeah.
And I think you can teach people to do certain things, but you're never going to teach a naturally introverted person to become the most extrovert person in the world. That's just my personal opinion. People will, no doubt, if they're looking at this, will go, no, you're wrong. People can change. I just think you've got a skill set, and that's how you're made up. And it's about building on those strengths and recognizing where your strengths lay.
And at Factotum, you probably see the very good firms that are really keen to push on and grow. But hand on heart, Bobby, what have some accounting firms got wrong over the last 18 years?
It's really interesting. You kind of get a firm that grows and they do really well. They win some clients and they get to a certain point. They kind of get stuck and they plateau. It's very difficult. And a lot of them seem to face the same challenge, where it's going from where they are here to really push. A lot of them have faced the same challenges. 2 in particular. One is they know where they want to get to, but they haven't got a clue how to get there, because they're spending so much time managing the practice blinkered with their head down, and they haven't been able to free up the time. So I was talking to a partner in a practice who had done hundreds of personal tax returns during tax season. He said, you know, I've never got any time to go and win new business and focus on the practice and build staff. I said, well, you're doing hundreds of tax returns yourself.
Yeah.
I said, have you not thought, if you were able to bring in someone to take those hundreds of tax returns and do them yourself, and actually free up, you know, a third of your time, then you could go and win new work and you cover the salary of the person doing the work. And it's just having someone to take the blinkers off and make you stop and think about what you're doing and how you're running your practice and the changes you could make. The owners, the partners, the principals in those practices tend to just still be doing everything and never take some time off to review the business. And the other challenge I think facing firms at the moment is the lack of staff and the lack of people available in the profession at the moment and the challenges around finding staff. I think some of the larger firms seem to be hoovering up all the staff at the moment and taking on whoever's around. And some of the mid-tier or smaller firms are struggling to recruit and get decent staff into the practice. And I think we had a period where there wasn't a huge influx of people who were the next sort of generation of accountants. So you've got this gap at the moment where you've got people that started practices and you've got people coming in now. But in the middle, there's a real gap of entrepreneurial minded accountants who could go into a practice and drive it forward. So I think it's taking the time to look at the practice or get someone in to look at the practice and say, you know, what could I be doing differently? But also building the team out to be able to free up your time and help scale up.
And speaking to the recruitment challenge, I read a stat recently that said there are more accountants dying or leaving the profession than there are coming in. And automation is part of that, but the attractiveness of accountancy may be. Any tips you might give to the smaller and mid-tier firms, Bobby, in their recruitment and retention policies?
Where I've seen a lot of the firms successfully working for their future is growing your own. So it's taking in trainees, apprentices, a whole raft of university leavers and school leavers at the moment have struggled through the pandemic to find jobs, don't know what, and there's a whole raft of incredibly bright, talented, entrepreneurial-minded teenagers and young adults in their early 20s that would desperately welcome the opportunity to get into the profession. So let's start training staff, whether it's ACCA, whether it's SEMA, whether it's bookkeepers or chartered students or auditors, start training the next generation, because if you grow your own team, you've got more chance of building, because trying to find people that are going to fit into your culture and trying to find people on the market at the moment is a real challenge. It's about now building the next generation. And there's a lot of Gen Z out there who want to get into the profession and would desperately love to get an opportunity like that. So they're out there. You know, there's the Kickstarter scheme, I think, as well. You've got the apprenticeship scheme, and you've also got school leavers who are desperately looking for a career. So I think it's now's the time to really start building from the bottom again.
More than that, though, Bobby, the clients of accounting firms now are getting younger and younger.
Yeah, I heard a statistic a while back, but the average age of a client of a professional service practice was sort of early 50s. And the forecast was that in 10 years' time, the average age of a client of a professional service practice would be the early 30s. So that means that in 10 years' time, those clients are currently 21, 22 years old. I said I've got a son and a daughter of that age, so I know what their friends are like. And they were my clients in 10 years' time. Currently, they don't have the experience of running a business. But what they do have is the ability to ask for help, more so than their predecessors. And they are quite open to outsourcing. And they're quite open to saying to people, look, I don't know what I don't know. I'm just going to do my bit here. So can you help me? So I think that the key over the next 10 years is going to be able to have a team that are able to work with the next generation of entrepreneurs and being able to translate. So the advisory services, the support, being able to literally plug in and work with that younger generation of entrepreneurs is going to be the next step for practices.
Yeah. Let's talk about Factotum for a moment, Bobby. What was your vision in setting it up?
So any owner-managed business has probably four or five key professional services relationships, whether it's your accountant, your marketing agency, your HR consultant, your IT company, insurance, property, whatever it may be. I always thought it was incredibly inefficient because you've got six or seven different relationships. You're talking to six or seven different people. You're having to manage six or seven relationships just to get one project over the line. And I wanted to build a practice which basically said, look, under one roof, we can provide those services, one point of contact, one invoice, flexible with no tie-ins, no long-term contracts. But you know that you can call one firm who are able to basically deal with all your back office services under one roof. And that was the vision. And that's what we've built. Incredible teams, incredibly talented people. One person termed it my version of Avengers Assemble, where I kind of have gone out to find the best of breed in every sector and put them together in one place. So certainly, and we've got a solution that works with it. So that was kind of the vision for owner-managed businesses to be able to focus on what they wanted to do and have a team that they call to support them with everything else.
So what are your conversations with accountants about? Do they advocate that service to their clients on your behalf?
Yeah, accountants historically are not the best at cross-selling other services. We wanted to solve the problem that numerous accountants are asked, and clients or contacts will turn around and say, do you know someone who can do X, Y, Z?
Exactly. This signpost, don't
they? Yeah, we wanted to solve that problem. When a client asks an accountant, do you know someone who? They sit there and go, oh, who am I going to refer to? I don't know who to refer. And it's a, and then they send an email around, who are we referring work to, or who's the lawyer we're using, or which IT company, or who can do marketing? marketing or social media. And we wanted to go to an accountant and say, look, when a client says to you, do you know someone who can do something? Just think of us. We are solving the problem for an accountant where they don't have to panic now when someone asks them for a referral. They know who to call. And for clients as well, we wanted to take away the pain for them when they're sitting there thinking, I want to do an influencer marketing campaign. I've now got to go and Google it the next 20 minutes and talk to 30 people to find out who the best person is. Whereas now they can talk to a business that can provide all those services under one roof.
Yeah. And what do you love most about what you do?
Working with business owners and entrepreneurs. I think seeing them achieve their goals and helping them achieve their dreams is just what gets me up in the morning.
Love it. Do you have a personal philosophy for success?
Yeah, I follow kind of the Richard Branson theme, which most people either agree with or disagree with. If someone asks you to do something, say yes and then work out how to do it afterwards.
Love that. There are no ideal jobs. What frustrates you most about your role or the profession generally?
The fact that professionals don't like change. You know, having been trained as an auditor, we were told you start and follow what you did last year. You've got the when you're following an audit firm. I think, you know, accountants seem to take that to heart and professional services practices seem to take that to heart, and they carry on doing the same things and are very nervous of change to make any difference. And that holds people back. And I think if you really want to change or progress your own personal development, sometimes you've just got to dip your toe in the water and take a risk.
Is there anything you've changed your mind on over the last few years? We are in interesting times, aren't we?
Yes. What the pandemic's done for me is it's made me sit still for a little bit, which is very interesting because normally before I've gone off at 100 miles an hour and said, right, here we go, we're off, we're doing it. Whereas what the pandemic did was made me actually sit down, contemplate the business.
Take a breath.
Right. Exactly. Put the right plans in place, put all the right procedures, the right controls, the right team. Now, actually, I've created the platform for success, which previously I would have gone for success and then created the platform around it. I suppose in many ways, it's been good and it's given me the time to actually reflect and take a more cautious and thought through approach rather than just try and make it happen.
Bobby, the accountants and the fintech listeners that we have on this show, if they want to have a conversation with you, like the sound of what you're doing, perhaps talk about some collaboration or bringing you on board, what's a good way for them to reach out?
I'm pretty accessible. Connect with me on LinkedIn. On Twitter, I'm Bobby Lane UK. My email address is bobby.lane@wearefactotum.com. I'm on Instagram as Bobby Lane UK1. But if anyone does want to have a chat about what I'm doing, what they're doing, always interested in meeting new people and having a conversation and trying to help any way I can.
That's great. And as a final thought, Bobby, imagine that I had the power to make you the czar, the overlord of the accounting profession worldwide, the president of the global industry. What would your message be to them? What would you add? Advocate. What do they need right now?
What I'd be advocating is not to be scared of technology, to embrace technology, using it as an enabler to allow you to focus on the value that you really bring to your client relationships. You know, accountants around the world have been trained to understand the numbers, to read a balance sheet, put a cash flow together and know what those numbers mean. Clients haven't, and for the most part, aren't financially trained. They're very good at what they're doing. And we've seen a lot of businesses spring up over the last few years through the pandemic. And there's a lot of people that have now set up businesses that might take off very, very quickly post-pandemic as things start to open up and get back to normal. They're going to need help from trained people that understand numbers, understand business, and can help them. There's a huge opportunity coming over the next few years for accountants to really become the partners that those businesses need. And really, as you said earlier, Rob, become those trusted advisors and really live it as opposed to just talk it.
Yeah. Well, Bobby Lane, that's been world class. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Rob.
This is the Accounting Influencers Podcast with Rob Brown and Martin Bissett.
Hey Rob, quick history lesson for you. Did you know that the first tax records were found etched on ancient clay tablets?
Yeah, I'd not realised how old you are, Martin. And the clay tablets are great though, but they're not exactly compatible with the latest digital tax innovations like making tax digital, are they?
No, they're not. People weren't thinking future-proofing back then. But for our listeners, you know, if they're moving clients from similar old school methods to digital records, there is a famously friendly accounting software solution for the UK's smallest businesses.
It's funny you should mention that. I was a judge at the recent Digital Accountancy Forum Awards, and that was a collection, Martin, of the great and the good in the accounting world. All the top networks, associations, alliances, some of the biggest vendors there. They were big on awards as well. And it just made me think Free Agent is who you're talking about, isn't it? And they've won a lot of awards for their integrations and platforms about being really easy to use. And clients can use it on mobile or tablet.
And not just the clay kind. Rob, where do accountants and bookkeepers go who really want to accelerate their client's journey to the cloud? What would you recommend they do?
I'd recommend they go and get a free trial at freeagent.com/tablet, because once you get into this, you experience it, you see how easy
it's
it is
to use. Around hole. I don't know, Martin, how
we've managed to fit so much into the small amount of time we have for this podcast.
And yet we do it week in, week out. And this is normally the moment where we would thank our listeners for their loyalty to the show. And this week is no different. Guys, if you've been listening for longer than 1 week, thank you very much. We see the numbers going up. You would expect us to say that, but it's true and we can prove it. And if you've just found the show this week, welcome. And we hope we've brought you enough value this week to make you stick around to see what we've got next week.
Lovely. And while we're thanking people, we've got to thank our sponsors as well, our partners who have stuck with us from the beginning and really helped us wrap this show up. It's a daily show. It's a radio style, as you know, and it allows us to cover a lot in a short amount of time. And Martin, we've done that this week. We kicked off with the news and you talked about the business valuations that we've traditionally thought of are not quite the case because some of the fintech vendors are getting involved in changing the game.
For generations now, when an accounting firm owner, whoever that happens to be, or owners plural, has come to think about exits and they look to their team and there's nobody there perhaps putting their hand up to be considered, then they generally think about selling the practice for a multiple of the recurring fees. There's not a lot of thought given to brand value or intangible assets. But nevertheless, what has come out of this news item that we covered this week is that if you're being acquired by perhaps someone in the fintech space, and that's not impossible for an accounting firm these days, in fact, there's a lot of examples of that happening now, then there is a different set of, shall we say, values or what's valuable to that acquirer than the multiple GRF. Now, of course, recurring revenue is important and recurring revenue is always going to be factored in. But there is more to that on tangible assets and there are also intangible assets to be considered. And what we looked at in this news item that we thought was interesting is what is being placed in the priority list in terms of what's the most valuable to the acquirers. What are they seeing that they want to acquire? And what are they paying a premium for beyond simply recurring fees?
And if you've got this far in the podcast, you'll have heard the highlights of the interview that I did with Stephen Heathcote. He's the global CEO at Prime Global. And it's great to talk to somebody, Martin, isn't it, who has a whole of market perspective, even an international perspective, because we talk to the leaders of firms themselves. But getting somebody on the show that sees what's happening across the world, sees the different challenges and opportunities for accounting firms. Stephen's really big on looking at those opportunities, spreading them throughout his members and sharing that intelligence. And he's got a brilliant leadership team at Prime Global that are adding real value to the client. So highlights today and the uncut version is coming out from that show at the weekend. So look out for that. And then in Here's What Works, Martin, just wrap up what we talked about this week.
Telling Compelling Stories was our title. For many listeners, they would be forgiven for going, whoa. I qualified as an accountant, not as a sales and marketer, not as a storyteller. But you need to listen to that section to understand where we went with it, because it focused on an actual firm who has actually got the message and has actually implemented and is actually seeing the results in terms of grade A lead generation. And all they have done is they have made their clients the center of the story. So take a look at that section to find out how they did it and what the impact has been.
And you'll find as well, a quote from Andy Bounds comes to mind, Martin. He said, clients don't pay you for what you do. They pay you for what they're left with after you've done it. And that is the happy ever after in the story, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as I have said many times, you know, whenever I speak to an accountant and talk to them about their professional qualifications, I ask them if they think the client considers that, you know, when buying, and they don't think they do. And then I ask them about their services and whether the client understands those at face value, and they don't think the client does. And then I ask them about their outcomes that they produce for the client and whether the client values those. And of course, they would tell me that the client does value those. And then I ask, which of those three things can we find on their firm's website? And we can find the qualifications, all the letters after their name, and we can find their service list, but we can't find the outcomes. So the very thing that the client buys, that's the thing we can't find on the website.
Yeah, and when you talk about somebody that tells a good story, walks the walk and talks the talk, You don't have to go much further than Bobby Lane, Martin, do you?
You do not indeed. You know, indeed. And you know, you have perhaps as long a relationship of knowing Bobby as I do. For me, it's all about track record. As we have said many, many times on this show, and we'll say it again, it's all about track record. And for me, Bobby brings experience, but he brings a freshness. He's not sort of somebody who said it was better in my day. You know, he's somebody who brings a fresh perspective and is always looking to the future in the accounting profession.
Yeah, and what I loved about the interview with Bobby, he's part accountant, part entrepreneur, part business owner. He's got a really, well, fresh perspective, as you said, but you've got to love his passion, haven't you? And he talks with such authority. It's a great one for accountants to listen to if they want to provide lots of extra value to their clients and really tune into what they want. So, Martin, take a breath. We've got through another week. Thank you, our wonderful listeners and sponsors, for being with us, and we'll see you on next week's show.